run. It's kind of like boxing. I was running every day, like all the time. And it's like, people are asked, what are you running from? And I'm like, I'm not running from anything. I'm running towards it. I always talk about run towards the roar. I am running towards it and I'm going through.
Hi, this is Tyler Ayler, and I'm a big ass runner from Highlands Ranch, Colorado. Welcome to the Big Ass Runner Podcast, where we entertain and encourage trail runners from all over the world. Now here's your host, the OG Clydesdale, Jeff Harrell.
Well, thank you, Tyler. Excellent job on that intro. As he said, I am the OG Clydesdale, Jeff Harrell. This is the Big Ass Runner Trail Running Podcast, episode number 163. Thank you so much for joining us. We have a special episode today. Today's episode, you know, normally we do two segments and a middle and an end and all that. And we appreciate everyone that tunes in each and every week. The Big Ass Runner Herd, we are so thankful for you. Today we have a special episode. It is our friend Karen Spark. She is behind the Love Never Ends Trail Race. We affectionately refer to her as K-Dog, as you'll hear in the interview. But Karen has quite the story. It is tragic. It is heartbreaking. But it's also heroic. She displays such grit, determination. You'll be moved by this story. And you will get, I believe, a new perspective on life. It was an honor for us to have this conversation with Karen. Honor for her to be on the show and to talk about what happened to her and how she is turning this tragedy into triumph. I think you will be moved by this. Here is my conversation with Karen Sparks. Well, now joining us on the Big Ass Runner Hotline, I have the pleasure of introducing Karen Sparks. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
It's hard for me not to call you K-Dog.
Me K-Dog. I love it. I know, Karen Sparks. Yeah, that's too professional.
It's very professional. K-Dog. I know, you are professional, but you're also fun. So I think K-Dog seems to fit a little bit better.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, K-Dog, I'm so excited for people to hear about you and your story. Certainly a very tragic story that you have turned from tragedy into triumph. And we'll talk more about that here in a second. But I always like for the Big Ass Runner Herd, a lot of people know you, but a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for them to at least get a sense of where you are in the world. Maybe just real quickly, where you grew up, a little bit about your athletic background.
Okay. Well, I'm Karen Ashley Sparks, K-Dog for short. And I was born in Denison, Texas. My dad was a high school football coach. And we all know in Texas. Yeah. That is the biggest sport. You live and bleed and breathe football in Texas. So I was born in Denison, a Yellow Jacket. And so we traveled around because of his coaching. And my mom was a teacher, elementary school teacher, and dad was a high school coach and teacher. So Denison, and then headed to Mesquite, Texas. And then I graduated from Terrell, Texas, the home of Jamie Foxx. So, which is real name is Eric Bishop. So anyways, yeah. So my athletic background, obviously being raised by a coach, and I have an older sister as well. And she was an athlete. She was always in basketball. I was a cheerleader. And then I was in cross country, volleyball and basketball, a little track, but I'm not fast. So yeah, they put me on the team for points, I think sometimes, but my biggest thing was cross country and basketball. And obviously I love cheer. So those were my three favorite sports. And so I did that all the way from, I don't know, elementary to until I graduated, but not good enough for collegiate level.
I resonate with that very, very strongly. Yeah. Did your cross country in high school, did that lead you to the trails, or how'd you get to the trails?
To the trails. Well, you know, it's crazy because I didn't get into the trails until 2016. And so fast forward, I mean, the whole reason that I got back into running and became an ultra runner was because of the tragedy that happened to me 8 years ago. And that was in 2015. So, I mean, I can get to that in a minute, but I got into trails probably, I think it was 2016 or 17 when my friend Brandy introduced me. I started off just doing the Dallas BMW. I started training. I just like got out there and trained for a half marathon and signed up for the road races. And I was all into the road races. And then she's like, hey, let's head out to some trail. And I was all in. And as soon as I hit the trails and I was in nature, I knew I was at home. Oh. And I did. I mean, I can still run on the road and I did a few other road races, but the rest is history. That everything else has been on trail. That's where I connected. And like, I felt like with what happened to me, my soul just connected to the trail and running with her a little bit, but then, you know, it just became like kind of like a solo thing. And then I ended up meeting Team Dirt and Vert out at Irwin Park 2019. And that's where the community came into my life with all these amazing people that I've met along the way. So that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah. The community, we were talking earlier before we hit record, the people and the community in trail running, I think, is second to none.
Yes.
And if for those to kind of set some context, Karen talked about Team Dirt and Vert. That's a local trail running club. Coach Greg leads that. People know, yes, Coach Greg, because Coach Greg's on here a lot. We love Coach Greg. So yeah, thanks for that. And yeah, you've mentioned a couple of times, and I know, you know, Why I Run is such a powerful segment we do on this show, and everyone's why they get on the trails. It's different and changes over time. Your why is so powerful. It's because, like you mentioned, your story. So if you don't mind sharing a little bit about your story and what happened, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah. I'll just try to keep it as short as possible and give the bullet points, because like I was telling Jeff I'm going to call you Clydesdale.
Yeah, call me El Jefe, the Clydesdale, whatever you want to call me, I'm good with.
Okay. Yeah. Once I share a little bit of my story, if you want to read further, you can go to my websites and we'll talk about that at the end. But so in 2015, I'd been married 11 years. And in that 11 years, and let me state, what I know now is not what I knew then. And it's been a huge process. And I've done a lot of work and had to really look inside after what's happened to me. But being married 11 years, I realized that I married a fraud. I married a con man, a manipulator, narcissist, sociopath that turned psychopath. So that kind of sums him up, being the monster that he was. And through that 11 years, you know, it's kind of hard to say, like, when I, you know, there was certain points in my marriage that I'm not going to say I didn't have fun or I didn't love him or, you know, things like that. But, you know, it's like I had that fairy tale wedding, but to the wrong person. But then I have to backtrack and say I would do it all over again to have Reagan and Grant, because if I hadn't have married him, I wouldn't have had the two biggest blessings for 8 and 9 years that ever came into my life and blessed me. And also my stepdaughter, Hannah, I wouldn't have her as well. So needless to say, I married a fraud. And so through that 11 years, we probably lived in 8 homes, and he probably, I don't know, had maybe 25 jobs.
Wow.
You know, someone like that, it's always searching for something that he's not. And so, and you know, that's not the way I was raised. So it's hard to pinpoint, like, well, why did you stay? You know, all those questions that I've been asked. And I would probably say maybe year 2 and 3 is where it started, where he asked if he could pawn my wedding ring, but he would get it right back so he could help pay the rent. So it started there with those little things of pawning things. But, you know, in the end, it's like, I knew that myself and my kids were like trophies on the shelf, and he took us down when he needed something out while he was scheming and scamming everyone out there. And I could go on and on about that, but bottom line, I mean, probably in 2000, I don't know, it was like 7 years in, I did leave for about 3 months and I took the kids to my mom and dad's, and you know, that's one thing that I really regret going back to him. I gave him an ultimatum, and obviously with the way narcissists and sociopaths, I mean, you got to study them. I didn't know even what that was when I was living under the roof with him. I didn't know. I was blind to that. And so therefore, I also became like numb and in a fog, because when you're with someone like that, they manipulate you so much, especially to someone that is good and loyal. It's something I learned in therapy. It's called the zombie bug. They suck the life out of you and end up killing you. And I mean, he literally killed my soul and I lost my identity. So that's kind of how I relate that, you know, him and me. He was that zombie bug that just sucked the life out of me. So in 2015, October 19th, I filed for a divorce. I mean, so there's a lot of story in the timeline here, but bottom line, I finally had enough. But my parents and my family were the ones pushing me for the divorce. That's something I always thought, you know, in marriage, it's a vow. It's before God. And I was raised, my parents are 52 years of marriage. I mean, I was blessed to have parents that are still married. And I got, no, it's not easy, but I didn't believe in divorce. And I didn't even know, I never even considered that. And I just kept staying and I kept going back because I wanted to do what was right by Reagan and Grant and Aunt Hannah. And sometimes walking out is the best thing for yourself and for the kids, and not to stay. And it doesn't always end up like mine. And that's what I like to tell people, to not be scared, but that's kind of, I know all of our situations are different. So I ended up October 19th, secretly going to an attorney with my dad, getting papers, and he got served papers on October 19th, 2015. And the whole story of that just in October is crazy. So we go about, you know, he gets served papers. He was upset, but I also, just to protect myself and my family, because he did not like my dad or my sister, and he got along with my mom okay, which is pretty wild because she was the one that didn't like him the most, didn't trust him. So anyway, he got served papers on that day, and I don't know, I should rewind a little bit, but I don't want to go off too much, but basically it was that weekend, because I filed on a Monday and I had to pretend all weekend that everything was okay. But I knew on that Friday before that he was going to get served that coming Monday. And I had to play the part all weekend. And with the kids, we went to the fair. We did all this family thing. And, you know, I ended up telling my daughter, Reagan, before. She is definitely my mini-me. She is full of spunk and fire. But she was wise, and also in her 9 years of life, she just knew things. And so I got to share with her, you know, before it happened, and she took it well, because she was like, Mom, I want you to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, not that there weren't tears, not that that's not hard, sure. But I knew she could like handle that. And so I shared that with her anyway. So that Monday morning, he, quote, goes to work, which no. So, and I will say there's another piece to this that it's kind of like I just watched a Hulu special on something called Betrayal, and it triggered something in me. And I am not ashamed now to say that the whole time we were married, he was having multiple affairs out there. And I did not know that until 3 months after everyone died. And I know I haven't got to that part, but I just wanted to say that piece because he was very sick in the head. And I mean, this is deep, and I know it's, you know, it's morbid, but it's real. And this is the rawness of it that I mean, he had profiles on all these websites, and it was just married men seeking married women to have a good time. And that's all it was. So there was probably, I don't know, 30 of them or more. I have no idea. So that was going on behind my back. So when he said he was going to work, I wasn't sure where he was going, but he left. The kids went with, I think they went to school, or they went with my sister or something. It's kind of blurry to me. And I loaded my car as fast as I could with everything of mine and then grabbed some things of Reagan and Grant's and sped away. I don't know. I was probably there. I don't even know how long, but you know, in the police report, it's like the neighbors were even watching in their windows and they're part of the police report because they were like, they didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. Anyways, fast forward, there's 2 weeks in between and David gets to talk to the kids on the phone. He's not happy, but it's going. Grant, my son, took it very hard. He was very upset with me, but he got better each day. I mean, he's still, you know, just, and bless his heart, I can't imagine because he loved his daddy and he loved his mommy. You know, he didn't know. And he was 8 years old.
It's hard to process at that age.
Yeah, they're fourth grade and second graders, you know? And so anyways, fast forward, they're 2 weeks and it's the weekend of Halloween. And I was, you know, told by the courts that I can't keep, I mean, obviously I didn't want to keep the kids from him, but I guess I wasn't really ready for the overnight stay and all that, but that's what we came to. And like I said earlier, I think, I don't know if I got it out, but there was a restraining order on him to not be able to come to my parents' house because the kids and I went and moved in at my parents' until this kind of like calmed down. And anyway, there was a restraining order because honestly, I will say I thought he would hurt me or come after me or my parents or my sister.
Yeah.
Never in a million years did I think he would do anything to his own children. So that's where we're at. I have them on that weekend. So Friday morning, they have a big breakfast with my dad and you know, they kiss their Mimi and Pop and I drive them to school. And, you know, we say our prayers, we're singing, we're laughing. I hug them and I say, you know, I'm going to see, because my kids are athletes. And so, I mean, they played everything and they were amazing, but I was like, I'll see your flag football game tomorrow. And Reagan, I'll see your cheer. And so, and I said, and if it gets rained out, because the weather was kind of crazy, then I said, I will see you on Sunday. And we hugged and kissed and they got out of the car, walked in school, and I never saw them again or got to hear their voices. Because that whole weekend when I gave the school the right for David to pick them up, he finally, when he had them, his anger really came out and he was like, you know, I wanted to hear their voices. I wanted to see them in their Halloween costumes. Halloween was the next Saturday because it was October 30th when I took them to school. And he said, no, I want you to feel what I feel. And I'm like, I didn't understand that. You know, it's confusing. And that's what narcissists and sociopaths do. They confuse you and get you to be the one that is sorry and that it's your fault that this is all happening. So, and, you know, obviously he lost control of me and, you know, he was embarrassed. And those kind of people, they're only worried about what they look like in the community and to everyone. And I'm like, you've already done that yourself, but I didn't get to see them or talk to them again. And on Sunday, November 1st, 2015, my dad and I were going to meet them at Canes and McKinney at 3:00. David started texting me that morning at 6 a.m. asking me if we were going to church or I was going to go to church. And I was like, what? You know, it was one of those other things like messing with me. And I was like, no way. I'm not coming to Van Alstine to go to church. No, not with you. I'll see you at 3:00 at Canes. And he just said, he kept saying, I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you. Well, that was very hard for me to not pick up the phone and talk to him. It was very hard, but I kept being told that you just state the facts to someone like that. So I just kept saying, I will see you at Canes at 3:00. And that probably stopped around noon. The texting did. And at 2:15, at the last minute, I told my dad, I said, I'm not going. I just felt this thing over me, my spirit. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I just said, Dad, I don't want to go. I don't want to see him. I'm not going to tell him I'm not showing up, but you're going to show up to that parking lot at Canes and you're going to get Reagan and Grant. I don't want to see him because he was also mad at me that my dad was coming. He was like, we're not going to be able to talk. And I'm like, yes, we will. But anyway, so I just was like, I'm not. And Dad and I like prayed and all that. And I was just like, okay, go. And so that's from Allen to Van Alstine, it's about 30 minutes. And I got a phone call at 2:30 that my house was on fire. And the first question I asked was his car out front in the driveway. And she said, yes. And then I started screaming at the top of my lungs that he's killing my kids. I just had that, the mom instinct. And I said, he is killing my kids. He's hurting them. And anyway, so if it is, I can't even explain, because I immediately went from calling 911 to calling Reagan and Grant's friends to calling my dad saying, do not stop at Cane's. You go all the way up to Van Alstyne, 100 miles an hour, get to the house, see what's going on. And so my dad was on the scene the whole time. I, as their mother, I can't even explain it to you. And it's still, I had to do a lot of work in therapy about this, about not blaming and myself. I didn't even get in a car. I didn't go 100 miles up the highway. I don't know, but I know that in my parents' living room floor, I was pacing and screaming. And then all of a sudden I was frozen and I was stuck in the fetal position in the middle of the living room floor. And I was stuck, and I just kept rocking like crazy, and just froze. And I'm like, I don't know. And so when I got the news finally, because also the policemen were calling in, I had family already at my house, praying and thinking all these things, and the good, they're somewhere else. They're not, he didn't kill, Reagan and Grant, and, surely he just hurt himself or something, or the house is on fire and they're somewhere else. I'm like, no, the car's there, And so when I got the final word, my uncle had to tell me the news, and even my aunt offered to get me in the car and drive. And I don't even remember that. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, it was so out of body. I can't even explain it, but and it does suck, I guess, for me, that I wasn't on the scene. But I wasn't meant to be on the scene. I don't even know what would have happened if I would have been, I can't even imagine, because there was cameras and firemen and everything was there. So bottom line, of course, they announced David dead first. And then they had to come out and tell my dad that Reagan and Grant were gone. So this was a double homicide suicide. He burned my whole life to the ground. He took my world and our dogs. He is a coward. And I could say much more, but I won't on air, but you can only imagine. So they all died in the master bathroom. He put my kids up front by the door and he hid in the back. He sat on Grant's dog to hold him down. And Reagan's dog was in the bathroom, in the toilet area, all by herself. I mean, it was a little dachshund, and Nash, Roxy and Nash were their dogs. And, that was it's just disgusting. It's vile. There are no words to describe what he did, and that he destroyed my kids and me and my stepdaughter. I mean, but I do know, and I guess I have to, keep believing, because my faith is huge to me, and what I believe in, and my higher power is God. And it's taken me a long time to receive and believe that my kids didn't suffer, that David did. David died in a fetal position with some trauma and blood. He suffocated to death. My kids, their bodies were laying on the floor the way that they sleep, and they were peaceful. And obviously I had to have a lot of interviews, with the firemen, CSI, and all those men that were on the scene. I had to sit down with them several times throughout the journey early on, because I just couldn't wrap my brain around it. And I was so freaked out. But the house, he doused that home with so many chemicals, not just gasoline, but the fireman was like, I don't know how they'd never seen that much gasoline. And my kids were laying in it, in the carpet. It was on carpet and it was soaked. And the walls had, I mean, the only reason, I mean, obviously I know this now is because I have all the pictures and photos of the crime scene. I finally got those and went through all of them one by one. And so I got to see everything and how Reagan was and Grant was and what he did. And it blew the garage off. It destroyed. I mean, I have pictures that I have posted of the, like, our living room. Grant's room was really bad. My bedroom was bad. But where they were in that master bath, where he wanted, I know, for them to be ashes on the ground, that didn't happen. I did get to, and I know it's just a shell of them, but I got to touch them again and see them. And they, you know, according to the autopsy and all the things I read, and, you know, I got to see pictures. Because I'm just someone that has to know. I have to know all the details. And I fought for that. And I got to see their burns. But I was also able to bury them properly. And they looked beautiful. And the family and friends got to see them again. It's not like they were destroyed. But obviously, as the mom, it's... Like I've said a thousand times, I mean, there's just no words to describe what we went through. And, you know, I say we being, I know I'm the mom, and it's the worst thing any mom can walk on this earth is without their children, because it should not be this way. No. It is not supposed to be this way. And especially the way that they went out. So being murdered by their own father, which is called filicide. So anything that you see that I put on social media or something like that, that's what filicide is, where the mom or the dad kill their kids and then kill themselves. And unfortunately, this has happened more and more. And, you know, I have women across the U.S. that I've connected with that were not in the same boat, but we have a similar story. And it's just, it's awful and unimaginable and gut-wrenching. So the journey there, I mean, that's like... November 1st, 2015. And then I buried him November 6th. And I am, you know, I'm in awe of, I guess, what God has done for me and my family, because I'm still here. Excuse me. I get choked up every time I talk about this, because I was buried alive that day. November 1st, 2015, the Karen Sparks that I knew, that, like, she died. I died with them. I wanted to get in those caskets as they were rolling down, like 6 feet under. I was watching, and I just, you know, you're such in shock and adrenaline. You don't even know what's going on. Yeah. And it's like, even 8 years, like where I'm at now. Yeah, I can talk about it all day, but it's harder now than it was then. As you know, in grief, and for bereaved parents, the further we go, the harder it gets. And I'm not saying that there's not ease, you know, and like some peace along the way, but man, it's a lot of work, and it's a journey that none of us should be on. So just being buried alive. And then before running came into my life, boxing was first. My sister literally dropped me off at Title Boxing 2 months after it happened. Like, she was dropping someone off at daycare and was like, my sister needs help and she needs to beat the crap out of something. And this is her story, so please help her. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I was in there 7 days a week. It saved me. Like, in that moment, in that season, boxing was my life for a whole year. I was also 60 pounds overweight. It helped me lose weight. And instead of, I guess I'll say, instead of hitting the bars and popping pills, I felt like I was doing something good for myself. And I'm so thankful for that, that I had people around me to guide me the right way. But not that that's an easy journey, but from boxing, that's where the running came in. And I felt like, you know, because really I started running with Title Boxing. My personal trainer there, Heidi, is the one that got me running. And then, you know, Brandy came in the picture later for ultras and trail running. But it's just that whole, like, I have a timeline of the 2016, I was boxing and running and I was so numb. And I think, you know, God gives us that shock and adrenaline to protect us for so long. And sometimes I wish I still had it, because you feel like, in a way, if I think about it now, I'm like, I felt like I had superpowers, because I don't understand how I was doing what I was doing. Yeah. But I will say, in 2017, 2 years after, I had been in my parents' house, and then I got out on my own. I thought I was ready. I thought I wanted to date again. And man, I got into another relationship. And I will tell you, it was more, let's say, physically abusive than I've ever been a part of. And you know what? I thought that I deserved that. And I stayed. I stayed for a year. But I was not in my right mind. I mean, you can ask any of my friends, and it's like, she obviously can't see very good. And she definitely is not like, it was so toxic again. But I didn't, I don't know what you want to call it. I was lonely. And I thought, I'll stay because I deserve this. And I didn't care. But 2018 rolled around and I was suicidal. And I had a plan, and I was in my apartment. I had a plan because I had plenty of alcohol at that time. And when this first happened with Reagan and Grant, I had doctors giving me prescriptions, and I didn't want any part of it. I just wanted to try to take melatonin. I didn't want Xanax, and I don't know all the others that I had. I used to have a list of what I had, and I just stuffed them under the counter, but I held on to them. So I had a plan there. And I had a lot of stuff. But I will say, so 2018, I attempted suicide. And then I crying out for help, asking God and my kids. I was like, Reagan, I need something to, because I was scared out of my mind. But I was so tired and exhausted that, I mean, that was 3 years. And it's like, I'm so done. But I was like, I need an intervention. And obviously that's where my parents got me into a trauma facility for 90 days in Tennessee. I mean, that's a huge part of my story, going to Milestones in Tennessee. And I have a website for them as well. And that is a huge part of why I raise funds for the RISE scholarships for bereaved moms, because it is pretty expensive. But that's my whole point, is because the kind of help that I got, not that you have to go 90 days, but for what I went through, I needed that. And sad to say, the reason I had the money is because my kids were murdered. And the state of Texas gives you the Crime Victims Fund. And I mean, it's sad. They put a price tag on your kid. And, you know, they have a number. It's like, no, their names are Reagan and Grant. They're not a number and a price, but 50 grand per child. And you know, that's what got me into to get help. And so I want to raise money for scholarships to help women get local therapy, or if they need to go to a trauma facility like I did, that's what my goal is. And so I come back and I start working. It's to come back to reality out of being, you know, I thought I was entering this facility was like a cult, and it was crazy. And I was like, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing here. I don't belong here. I just like, I was so angry. The anger was like, it was huge. And it became, you know, a problem. And I was just like, so mad. It took like 30 days for me to get used to that place. And then I didn't want to leave. That was my family, and it was a sacred time. And, you know, you're with 50 people across the nation in that home, and you connect. And I don't know. So coming back to the real world was very, very hard. I got a job and I started writing and collaborating with my sister on a book. And then, I don't know, those are just like bullet points. And I mean, 2020 came. And that's where I call it flipping the script. And I know that 2020 is all what everyone knows, the COVID time hit. And that's where I feel like everything changed for me, when everybody, like, this was meant to isolate you and keep you at home and not around anyone. I'm like, I was tired of being in the shadows and in the darkness. And so I chose my running to do 100 miles at Irwin Park on a 9-mile loop. And because all the races were canceled, we all know that as runners, all of our races were canceled. So I decided to do my own, and I got Team Dirt and Vert involved. I did it because on that 5-year anniversary in 2020, it lined up with the dates exactly. So that Halloween night was that Saturday, and I ran into Sunday morning, finishing on November 1st, 2020. I did 100 miles. I think it did take me 31 hours. But I had Channel 8 News was out there and everything, and that's on my website. But that was huge, flipping the script, coming out of the darkness and the shadows, because I had been hiding and run away for every holiday, every whatever, and especially around Halloween. So that flipped it for me. And just the family and the camaraderie of the people that came out to support me and pace me and crew me at Irwin Park was, it was crazy. But it was beautiful too. And so I guess I could keep going on and on and on. I mean, 2021 and where we are now, just in 2021, you know, just pushing through pain. I think a lot, you know, with bereaved moms, and you can read statistics on my website about really what happens physically to bereaved mothers. And bottom line, I should either be hospitalized in a psych ward or dead. So those three things are like huge, like, and I'm none of those. And I am thankful that I have chosen to do the work and to get up every day for Reagan and Grant and myself. I had to learn it's also for me. It's not just for them, but obviously they're my drive for who they are and what they stand for. Cause I always talk about my heart beats for three. And that makes me stronger and they keep me going. And so I had a lot of physical stuff going on internally and with some injuries, with had to get MRI, had to step out for about 4 months. I mean, I should have had back surgery, but I opted out of that and just, you know, did it holistically. And so it just kept moving. That's my whole thing, is movement is life to me. And not being, I'm not saying we don't rest, that we don't need rest. I'm saying I just, for me personally, and what works for me is to keep going. And we also have to rest in the midst of that. I understand that. But I was pushing through pain and I was, you know, running to punish myself for a while. I really was. But also, you know, so those are just the different seasons through running and where that's gone. And just with the grief being at the top of the list there on what I can show up and do and what I choose not to do. But in that time, it was a blessing. I got to be in the Runner's World magazine. So our stories in that, in the 2021, I'm not sure which month it came out in. And it's just, I think running for me was a lifeline. It was survival and it was therapy. And I shouldn't say was, it still is. It's just is taking a little bit of a backseat sometimes to where I was and how intense I was running. It's kind of like boxing. I was running every day, like all the time. And it's like, people are asked, what are you running from? And I'm like, I'm not running from anything. I'm running towards it. I always talk about run towards the roar. I am running towards it and I'm going through. What I learned, the biggest thing in therapy is, and I'm reading it right now, the only way out is through and the only way through is in. And so going through, not around, because we got to go in to get out and you got to go through. And so just the different stages. So I don't know, in 2022, race directing, that was my biggest thing. That was my win for 2022, is to put on the Love Never Ends Trail Run. Because I had known, like in 2016 or 17, this was birthed inside of me of the Grey Room movement and wanting to help women. You know, I didn't know how I was going to do it. So I had friends and stuff come together and get all the paperwork done for me. My best friends from high school, and they got the 501c3 set up, and I was legal like in 2018. And it's just like coming about, because, you know, sometimes just our dreams and goals, I guess, I mean, everything changed and I was changing and grieving all in the same thing. And I had to give myself grace, because I thought it was like, I had to be done, like, you know, and I'm just in a hurry, but no, it doesn't have to go that way, you know? And so I guess the race directing, and I wanted to do something at the end of around the anniversary every year. And so that's why I started doing the Love Never Ends Trail Run. And, you know, I had with Blaze Trails helped me, Chris and Ann helped, and Greg. And I mean, a lot of the like people I was reaching out to, lots of friends. I mean, I can't think of everyone's name that were helping me, like guiding me on what to do, because I was clueless.
Yeah.
And I think I still am clueless, but we're on our second annual this year, and it's so many people behind me. Like, you know, my sister has helped push the whole sponsorship. And I think I have 24 valued sponsors that are doing in-kind donations. And I think I have, right now I have 12 paid sponsors. I'm just like in shock because it's amazing, you know, that the people want to give and help.
Yeah. We'll dig into your race here in a second. Cause I'm sure people have listened to your story and they're like, I want to respond. And for some, I'm sure it's been, you know, it's resonated in some way because they've gone, certainly probably not to the level you have. But first of all, I want to say, Karen, thank you for sharing this. Thank you for honoring us with this story, because I know it is your life. It's so powerful. And like you said, no mom should have to lose her kids.
No. I cry every day.
you know, I've got 4 kids and I can't imagine. So thank you for sharing that. You said something earlier, and I totally agree with it, but you said you were in awe of what God has done. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, man, I'm in awe of what you have done. I mean, I think there's a lot of people think that would have given up. And I know there were times that you wanted to.
Yes.
You mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I know there were times you wanted to give up, but there were people that came beside you to kind of help you through this, and the power of someone else, the power of the community,
yes,
the power of other people. But you also had, you played a huge role in that. You had to want to, at some level, like you said, flip the script and work on yourself and deal with this. Like you said, go through it, deal with it, run towards the roar.
Yeah.
And so I just want to say, you know, gosh, thank you for that gift, that example, that inspiration. Because I know, like, we all deal with different things at different levels. And at some level, I know everyone has resonated with this. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. My life was saved in 2018 for this purpose, you know, because I shouldn't be here. And I'm not saying from that point, just because I went to therapy and came home and all this, it's not been, you know, rainbows and butterflies. No, it is still dark. It is still lonely. And I will say that the silence is deafening, but I have the tools to pull from. And that's the thing. I thought I could do it alone, and man, that didn't work out too well. Like I said, I'll say it over and over, I wouldn't be here. But that debilitating depression and grief and darkness, you know, that's where the faith comes in, and the grit and digging deep. And I ask that Reagan and Grant and my Heavenly Father, I need them. I wouldn't be here without them. And then, you know, my earthly parents, you know, like, it's a community. But I will say that back then, and I think being raised by a coach, it's you don't give up. You finish what you start, and that can work for you and against you in different times in our lives. And that was one reason I didn't want to give up in my marriage, and I wouldn't call it giving up, but I had to pull the plug, you know, and then my story didn't end the way I wanted it to. And it's unfortunate and it sucks, you know, but I'm just, Through therapy and exercise and support groups and me waving the white flag and saying, I need help, that was the bravest and most courageous thing I could have done. And that's with other people telling me, like, man, no, asking for help is not weak, when I always thought it was a weakness because I was so independent. But man, I was quite wrong. So I think asking for help, that's one of the toughest things for most of us to do, because we all think that we can do it by ourselves. And I don't agree with that anymore. I need people.
I want to sit on that for a second, because I think you're absolutely right. I think if there's folks listening right now that are like, hey, I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do next.
Yep.
I'm stuck. Like you said, wave the white flag, not in surrender.
No.
But in help, like say, yes, in an idea that, hey, I need help with taking that next step. I need someone to come alongside me.
Yes.
The last thing I think you want to do is give up.
Right, right. And that's what I'm here for. And you know what? I will say, if I can't help you, that's what I want to be, like this hub. And that's what my nonprofit and the resources that are on my nonprofit page, the Great Root Movement, I don't know how many are on there, but there are hotlines, there are places to call, lots of resources and places I've been or maybe not been or talked to, but they're along the same lines. If I mean, just needing someone to talk to, but I'm also here as well. And no, I'm not a therapist, but I'm a real person and I've been through hell and back and I can relate in some form or fashion. I know we all do this differently. And I want to help, you know, mainly women. I know that, you know, inspiring men and all that stuff too. And I know there's bereaved dads out there, but my focus right now is to help women like me. Yep. In that domestic abuse or bereavement. And so in mental health, I mean, just, I don't know. My motto at the Great Root Movement is love, move, and rise. And we do it together.
Love it.
I'm like, if I can, you can. And I don't mean that cocky, but I'm like, man, I'll be honest. I feel like sometimes I have some reasons to pull the card, the victim card, if you will, but I hate that victim mentality. But it's like, man, I don't think anyone would blame me if I called it. Like, I'm right. Out, deuce. Right. But yeah. Man, I will say, I have Reagan and Grant's pictures like all over my place. And it's like, I look at them, I talk to them, I visit with them. I mean, I'm just like, if I quit, if I give up, if I call it, you know, say if I died, or, you know, if, meaning if I did something like that to myself, or if I just laid in bed and never got up, or I went and, you know, put my, I don't know. I feel like they're dying a second death. And I can't have that. I already had enough guilt and shame as it was. And I've worked through that it was my fault, but it wasn't my fault. I didn't do that to them. But my point is, it's like all those doubts and those dark, the darkness and the lies and the demons that come at us, looking within. And I know not everyone believes, or, you know, we don't all believe the same, and that's okay. I guess the bottom line is just, please get help if you need help. Please ask for help. I mean, I have, you know, my websites, my phone number, whatever, I can guide you and get you somewhere. That's what I'm here for. So yeah.
We'll definitely share here at the end how everyone can get in contact with you and get more involved.
Absolutely.
But I just want to say too, I have no doubt that Reagan and Grant are so proud of their mom for getting back out there and taking, you know, what could have been just a complete tragedy and really trying to, like you said, flip the script. And help other people, because I think at this point now, you're helping so many people just by sharing your story, by sharing resources, by sharing opportunities, and by putting on a race. So let's talk about your race. I know the Big Ass Runner Herd, and they're so kind, and they want to get involved, and they want to help, and they may not be in North Texas and be able to run themselves, but I think there are ways that they can get involved. So let's talk a little bit about your race.
Yes. The second annual Love Never Ends Trail Run is September 30th at Irwin Park in McKinney, Texas. And if you are not local and cannot show up, or if you are local and can't show up that day, I have virtual options. I have a 5K, 15K, and 30K. And so I'm hoping that the Big Ass Runner Herd across the U.S. will...
And Latvia. Don't forget Latvia. We've got lots of...
The nation, like,
the globe.
Everybody to sign up virtually, and the virtual runners get a medal. So, and that's exciting. So we have, for anyone that is going to show up this year, we're going to have more sponsors, and I have giveaways. I think right now I have around 14 or 15 giveaways for the raffle, but you have to be present to win those. They're pretty good. And I have a food truck this year that I'm excited about. So
I didn't know that part when I signed up. I didn't know about that part.
Yes. So I'm hoping it all goes as planned and goes smoothly as it can. But yeah, I'm excited. And it's my one big fundraiser of the year, because not only do I raise money for bereaved moms, the Reagan and Grant Small Endowed Memorial Scholarship is for seniors at Van Alstyne ISD and Melissa ISD. And we pick several seniors each year to receive. So money going into the Great Root Movement also goes to those education foundations to help kids and for whatever their endeavors are after high school.
Love it so much. And they can, if you're listening and you want to get involved, go to thegreatrootmovement.com. You can learn more about Karen there. You can learn more. You said you got links there if people need more information. And you can click on events and it'll take you to the Love Never Ends Trail Race. You can sign up. If you want to run live, that's great. If you want to run virtually, please, please check that out. We would love for you to be part of this.
Yes. Yeah. I think the artwork this year is pretty dope.
It's pretty awesome.
I love it. I like always the L&E, and I have to thank Denny for that. He is my artist. And so, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about the new logo and the race logo. And I think the medal is going to be that as well. It's not going to be like last year. So
love it.
And I have swag online that's going to be for sale too, for anyone that, you know, and I can mail that to y'all, or if you want shirts, I have buffs, shirts, stickers, and
you got all the
hats.
Merch. I love it. Got all
yeah,
the merch.
I have merch. I have the merch. I need to add some more to my website, but yeah, I have those options on my website for merch. I have hats, shirts, buffs, and stickers so far. And yeah, I guess like, I'll probably be sending any of the virtual runners. They'll get a sticker too, along with their medal. So
definitely check it out. TheGreatRootMovement.com. And mm-hmm. I want to ask you too, Karen, because I imagine there are some folks who listen to this that just really resonated, and maybe they're dealing with something. If they wanted to reach out to you directly, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can go to my websites and they can reach out, because that goes to my email. Yeah, I think that goes to thegreatrootmovement@gmail.com. I have several emails, so I don't want to get people confused, but those are on my website. I have thegreatrootmovement@gmail.com, and I'm also KarenASparks@greatrootmovement.com.
And they could probably connect on Instagram as well, right?
I'm actually on Twitter as well, but Twitter, you know, like Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And Threads. That's a new thing. But nice. I put the Great Root Movement on there, so I could, I don't know, kind of get more following there too. But yes, KDog77 or the Great Root Movement. I have both accounts on Facebook and Instagram is probably the best way. In email, I will respond.
Well, definitely. Yeah, definitely reach out. Definitely go to the Great Root Movement. We would love for you to run with us. I'm going to be there at Irwin Park.
Yay.
And if you can't be in Irwin Park, then do the virtual race. You get a medal and a cool sticker.
Yes.
So good. Well, K-Dog, so great to chat. And thank you again for sharing this story. It's so, so powerful. And man, just an honor to hear it from you. I'd heard a little bit about it. So just an honor to hear it. And man, just inspired by you. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And one last thing I want to tell everybody, that it's important, that it meant something to me when I learned that we are seen, heard, and loved. Because when you're seen, you know, I don't know, I just take that to a different level, but you're not alone. And that's huge. Because that's like what the Great Root Movement is. It's like a community of hope, and to have a safe place to be seen, heard, and loved, and to know that we're not alone in our walk. So just keep running towards the roar, and we will rise together.
It's amazing. Amazing. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Karen, you are such an amazing person. Thank you for the honor of being able to share your story on the Big Ass Runner. And if you're listening out there and you've been touched and moved, reach out to Karen. She would love to hear from you. Reach out to me. Reach out to someone. I think that's the message here is we all are going through different things, different levels of tough things in life. And it's the community, it's the people around us that can help us get through it and get to the other side a stronger person. So please reach out if you're going through times like that at this particular moment and in moments to come. No doubt. Well, thanks to everyone involved with this episode, to Tyler for that intro, of course, for Karen, for K-Dog for coming on and sharing her story with us. Make sure if you're interested, please do the virtual version of Love Never Ends. If you're out there and like, hey, I can't get to North Texas in September, but I want to be a part of it, doing the virtual race would certainly be a huge, huge blessing. So please do that. Again, that is thegreatrootmovement.com. Go to events to sign up. And of course, thanks to our audio engineer who makes us sound so good, Steve Cinnamon Bear Saunders. Well, with that, get out there, hit those trails, and keep running your asses off.